Elliot Ackerman has reckoned with the horrors of war from many angles. He has guided fellow Marines through brutal urban combat in Iraq, interviewed Syrian democratic activists about their failed revolution, and sat down with a former member of Al-Qaeda in Iraq to discuss the future of the Middle East. In his new book, Places and Names on War, Revolution, and Returning, Ackerman, a National Book Award finalist, journalist, and decorated Marine, weaves together these vivid stories illuminating the stunning realities of the war-torn Middle East. The result is a meditation on contemporary geopolitics as well as the terrible lure of combat. Elliot Ackerman joins us this morning to talk about the new book, Places and Names, and we welcome him back to the program. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me.
Very nice to have you back. Give us a sense of what brought this particular book together.
Well, I do a lot of work as a journalist, and as I was covering the Arab Spring wars in the Middle East, specifically in Syria and inside Iraq after the Islamic State swept through, what became obvious to me was that those wars were informed by the U.S. experience there a decade before. So the book Places and Names is really a tour around the modern-day Middle East, but it's also one part memoir, and then it gets into some of my own experiences there in the past decade fighting as a Marine.
This comes just on the heels of an amazing novel that you wrote, Waiting for Eden, just a few months ago. What is that back and forth like for you of going in the fictional world, which obviously has some correlation to your life, and then also to then do the straight on reporting and including memoir as well?
As a novelist, I sort of find my process with regards to research as being mostly experiential. And as I'm going to places and having those experiences, I often find myself filing journalistic dispatches kind of as you go. So if someone were to sit down with my novels, whether it's Waiting for Eden or Dark at the Crossing, which is all set in southern Turkey, if you were to read this memoir in tandem with those books, you would see a lot of the antecedents of those novels in these bits of journalism. And I often find that my journalism is where I'm first starting to digest the ideas that take fuller life in the stories and characters that are present in my novels.
Do you see parallels even from when you are on the ground as a journalist in Syria and then hearkening back to your combat experiences, and it seems to be the case in the book, of the combat experiences in Afghanistan or Iraq?
Well, I think you definitely do, particularly to these wars, because they haven't ended and they've been going on now for 18 years. And just because, we as Americans declared our war in Iraq over in 2011, that didn't mean the conflict there finished. And it's impossible to really understand that conflict without understanding, not only the U.S. involvement of the past decade, but understanding the region and the history that goes back 100 years. So for me, as someone who's interested in stories, what I also try to do in Places and Names is draw a through line through all of those experiences. And I do it not only through reporting, but also through many of the people I've met. One of the central characters in Places and Names is a former member of Al-Qaeda in Iraq who I fought against, who later basically became a friend. And there's a series of our conversations that's knitted throughout the book.
Hmm. When you returned after serving, at what point was it a conscious, or tell us about the conscious decision to say, okay, I now want to go back as a journalist?
It was more of an intuition of knowing that I was working as a journalist and knowing that there was still a story there, that there was a lot of unfinished business in that part of the world, and that I felt that I was still invested in that story. It's sort of like being an expatriate of a place. If you're an expatriate of a place, it means that you are often defined by a place that you don't live in the moment. And so I felt kind of like I was an expatriate of these wars, that I was living back in the United States, but the wars had defined me. And I then had an opportunity to go back to the wars. And I took it because I wanted to not only understand what had happened to me back then, but I also wanted to understand what was happening right now.
Did you find that understanding?
No, I think that you find the understanding by continuing to ask the questions. And so there's one of the things in the book is I go back to Fallujah where I fought in 2004, and I go back 12 years later and stand in some of the streets that I had fought in when I was 24 years old. And again, what's different about these wars is some people have asked me was that a cathartic experience? And I would say it wasn't really cathartic in the way you might think it was cathartic for the World War II vets to walk across the beaches of Normandy or the Vietnam vets to go into the jungles around Saigon, because the war was still going on. There wasn't an endpoint yet. So it was more like kind of being updated as to what was taking place in these venues still.
Do you have to think very, very long and hard about making a trip back to where you fought in the Battle of Fallujah and revisiting the city, and having an idea of what to expect, and obviously having no idea what to expect?
Yes and no. I mean, I think I have thought long and hard whether or not I would have ever wanted to go back in the places I wanted to go back to. And these places that had defined me and the people who I knew had defined me. But then when the opportunity presented itself, I knew how I felt about going back, and I knew that I wanted to. And so when the opportunity to go back came, I jumped on it.
The word closure, of course, is a word that is used a lot. I don't particularly care for it. I don't know how you feel about it, but I will use it in this instance only because in going back and remembering those who fought with you who died in that process and in that fight, does that help in some way in the grieving and the grief and ultimately the understanding?
Well, I don't like the word closure either because I think it's sort of a fake term. There's never closure. There's just you're continuing to kind of tend to certain memories. And I think that one of the things that's specific to veterans of these wars is that and really of any war is when you come out of that war, if you fought in it, you kind of become a custodian to the memory of the war, whether that's the specific events or the people who fought in them. And so, one of the things, frankly, I do that I feel is the best way to pay tribute to, to friends of mine who've been killed along the way is, I tell stories about them. I tell stories about them to my kids, hoping that my kids will remember some of those stories and maybe tell them to their kids, and then those guys get to live on. And then I also tell, I also just tell stories. I tell stories that either involve them directly or if it's a novel, I tell stories that, engage with some of the emotional truths that were present in my relationship with them. So to me, that's kind of how I maybe don't find closure, but, find meaning.
Right. What do you think the understanding in, both as a journalist and as someone who has fought on those battlefields, of understanding the level of understanding of the average American of what has been going on over the past two decades?
I think one of the things that are specific to this war is how we fought them. These wars have been fought with an all-volunteer military, and they've been funded through deficit spending, so none of us have been taxed on these wars. And that's never happened before in the history of our country. In Vietnam, we had a draft. In World War II, we had war bond drives and a draft. I mean, all the way back to the Civil War, where the first ever income tax came out of the Civil War and the first ever draft. And those were all really national efforts. And this war, hasn't been. And because of that, there's been a few things that have been happening. I think you've seen a real widening of the civil-military divide. People will often talk about wars being generationally defining. I would say these wars have not been generationally defining. We have ideas of writers who are, kind of part of a lost generation, which was famously said of the First World War generation. And I would argue that, right now we don't have a lost generation with these wars. What we have is kind of the lost part of a generation. And I don't know which is worse, whether you'd want to be part of a lost generation or be part of the lost part of a generation.
Mm.
But as long as we fight our wars this way, it's going to only increase the civil military to the divide that exists in this country. But furthermore, and I think most dangerously, it's going to make it feel as though it's very easy to go to war. And that's dangerous, and it's particularly dangerous in a democratic republic.
But it does, and I certainly understand your point, but it is easy, right? I mean, it's too easy, isn't it?
It is too easy, and I think that's the real challenge. And so these wars, we've been able to manage in that way. But, you know, if we look at the headlines today where we have, you know, saber-rattling going on in the Straits of Hormuz with the Iranians, or even, you know, what we have seen over the last year with the North Koreans, I think most Americans aren't paying particularly close attention to those events, it would seem, because there's sort of this, you know, if past is prologue, well, if we do wind up going to war there, it's probably not going to affect me that much if I'm not volunteering for the military. And I think that is a recipe for sleepwalking into a much broader war, and so much as our idea of what it means to go to war has become skewed.
So in a way, is the book a way of waking us up out of that sleepwalking? Or an attempt to?
No, and you know, this book is not a polemic in any respect. You know, this book is really just my attempt to show the experience of our wars, to show what's going on in the Middle East, to try to illuminate certain connections that might not be obvious. You know, the connection that exists between myself, an American war veteran, and someone who fought for Al-Qaeda in Iraq, or the connections that I found between myself and a member of Syria's democratic resistance during the revolution, and to kind of give the reader just a feel and a tour for what these places look like today and also what's gone on there in the past 10 years during our wars.
The name of the book is Places and Names on War, Revolution, and Returning. The book is by Elliot Ackerman. Elliot, thank you very much for sharing with us. Always a pleasure.
Thanks so much for having me back.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, Places and Names is the name of the book. It is published by Penguin Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.